Yeah, let's get a mic. I think it's... Oh, my God, it's time. Hang on. I thought I had another minute. I hope. Okay. I'm at the official speaker location. I walk around... How many of you have seen me talk before? Oh. So if you hear a joke you've heard before, you gotta laugh. Okay? So I've gotten some people have given me a hard time because I walk around and that makes life difficult for somebody. I can't tell who it is. I don't know. Anyway, hi. So I'm here to talk to you. Now, by the way, let me just say thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. This is, I was just at the North American Tech Ed 2 weeks ago. This is the same one. How many of you have been to a Tech Ed before? Okay. Is this not the hardest Tech Ed ever in terms of what am I going to see? Because I clicked everything before I went to Orlando, like, want to see, want to see, want to see, want to see, want to see. And then I looked at Outlook, and I have 5 sessions I have to get to every single time period. Does that sound familiar? Okay, you know what that means to me? It means if I screw up, I'm dead. So thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm only mildly pandering when I said this is great. Now, I said here that I'm a cloud Gnostic. That's not a real word. You probably knew that, but... What that means is that, you know, it's kind of like agnostic. I'm not here to say bad things about clouds. I'm not here to say good things about clouds. I'm just here to talk about them. And I'll tell you, this is my spin, the economist thing. I'll explain that in just a moment, okay? So just understand that's what cloud gnostic means. And I'm not talking about Microsoft always, but I will be talking about them sometimes. So basically what I want to talk about, before I was a computer person, when I was a kid, you couldn't get to computers. I read books about computers so I could learn them. And then I finally got my hands on them in the early 70s. And I just loved the thing. I took some courses at university on it. But I thought to myself, I'm not going to finish my computer science degree. That's all we had in the 70s was a computer science degree. There was no such thing as MIS or IT or whatever. And I thought, I'm not going to finish this because this is all fun stuff. But I mean, how could you make any money in computers? Which will give you an idea of how closely you should pay attention when I'm talking about the future, all right? Instead, I ended up taking economics courses. Why? Because I'm good with math. Maths, on this side of the Atlantic. And economics is basically calculus with funny names. It's true. So it's a great way to get a course without having to write papers or do a lot of hard math. But I found I liked it. So I got 2 more degrees. And so I'm not trained in computer science. I'm trained in economics to the PhD level. All right? Now, I went off and did that. So I worked in D.C. I worked in Washington, D.C. for a while as an economist for 4 years. I was a government economist. I can admit it. Hi, I'm Mark, and I was an economist. Hi, Mark, you know. And my job was to predict the future. Really. My first job, straight out of graduate school, 1980, was to write a model that would predict how much Social Security was going to cost in America through the year 2055. No, I got paid to tell the future. Do you want to know how to tell the future? Are you going to be like a quiet European audience? Do you want to hear how to tell the future? Yes. And I'm going to tell you later. So I can't have you leaving now, can I? You know, and there's a story in Washington. Apparently, we had a president, Harry S. Truman. He was a president in the late 40s, before me. But I was born in the mid 20th century, and the mid 1900s, I think of it as. Anyway, so one day Harry Truman said, "Bring me a one-armed economist." They're like, "Harry, what?" "I want a one-armed economist." "Why?" "So we can't say on the other hand." So I was an economist, and it's not honest work, but it makes you think about things. And so when the cloud came around, I mean, I probably had the same reaction that you did. The cloud comes around, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, look, a new idea in IT. How exciting. And because you may know this, okay, but here's the next truth I'm going to give you. The most dangerous thing in IT is an article about IT in an airline magazine in the hands of your CIO. Sorry, how many CIOs do we have here?
Okay.
Oh, good. Let's talk about them. All right. So don't tweet that. Not kidding. Don't tweet that. All right. So we're talking about this, the thing we hear about a lot. And this is, of course, what is this? It's the cloud. And by the way, yes, that is the scariest cloud picture I could find. And by the way, I took this picture. I took all the cloud pictures. And the reason I did that is I can deduct the cost of my camera from my taxes. That's my plan. That's my plan, okay? So I'm not here to pick on any vendor's cloud. I just want to look at the economics of it. There are certain things, like economics makes you think in particular ways, all right? So I am a cloud Gnostic, but I have to tell you that I'm constantly revising my opinion up and down. I will talk about several, a small number of kinds of clouds, not because they're the best or the worst, it's just I know about them. I'll talk about the Amazon cloud because one of my best friends in the world is a man you may remember, Steve Riley. Does that ring a bell for anybody? So Steve was with Amazon Cloud for a while. He's now at Riverbed. He's quite happy there. He likes his job there. And another good friend of mine is a man you probably might know, a guy named Rasinovich. Does that ring a bell? Anyway, so he left the Windows team, you know, a while back, and now he's working with Azure. Now, hang on. Okay. Because we're in Europe, now say it with me. How do we say Azure? That was almost perfect. Because I know people who work with Steve Ballmer, and Steve Ballmer gets cranky when, like, people from other countries say Azure wrong. So I guess there are new standards, and one of the standards is Azure. That's good to say, okay, Azure. So Azure choosing your cloud vendor. Anyway, so I have to say, I don't work for Microsoft. Okay, I just want to clarify that. So the thing I want you to get is that, again, my opinion changes on a regular basis. Azure, when it first came out, whenever I'm in town, Mark and I get together for dinner, and I was giving him a lot of trouble about Azure because it was just so lame. That was a couple of years ago. That was 2.5, 3 years ago. But, I mean, you know what's cool about the cloud? This is just the geek in me speaking. In the Azure world, the cloud is changing so rapidly, it's unbelievable. I'll give you an example. 3 years ago, if you had a virtual machine, the question was, how do I get to it? You couldn't RDP to it. There were so many things you couldn't do. Wait 3 months. You know how they talk about internet years? Cloud years are even faster. I have seen so much change and so much improvement in Azure, just the new options, that I'm pretty excited about all that stuff. So we got lots of topics and not enough time, so this is what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to do the cloud definition thing. So, again, I don't mean to offend anybody, but I never know what you guys are here for. And so this is a destination check. I want to make sure. I'm going to do the cloud definition. How many of you know what PaaS, IaaS, SaaS are? Okay, so that's only about like half of you. So I put that in and I thought I'd make a joke about how there's a law that you have to do that, but there's a lot of folks out there. I get an interesting combination of people out here. This is generally pointed at IT pros, but let me ask, do we have any developers in the room? Developers? Okay. Developers, respect. Just understand I'm focusing this at IT pros. And any managers here? It's okay. Come on. All right. That's all right. For managers. So managers and IT pros, understand that you see the cloud differently than the rest of us. Because IT pros have one question about the cloud. Am I going to lose my job? No IT manager says, I might lose my job. No dev guy says, I might lose my job. Dev guys say, new Microsoft platform, hot damn. You know? Overtime. Teach me .NET 4.5. I can't wait. And I'm enough of a dev that I'm actually pretty excited about it. I might have to step beyond the podium here. Because the async stuff is really pretty groovy. So I don't get out much. What can I say? You know, I've been single for almost 2 years now. That's the big question. Am I going to lose my job? We got cloud wows and cloud worries. And then we'll look more closely at service quality expectations, SLAs, apps in the cloud. I'm going to try to get us out on time. If I get us out a little late, it's the last session, will you forgive me, pretty please? Because we have a lot to do. Okay? So this is a destination check. You know, like you get on the airplane and say, we are now going to Munich, you know? But they've closed the door at that point, and it's too late. But there was... Is this what you wanted? Is this okay? Talk to me. Thank you. And then we'll do a recap. So cloud definitions. So what is a cloud? What does a cloud mean? Now, first of all, forget the definitions. Do you know why we have definitions? To make life easier for salespeople. No, I'm serious. Anybody remember the OSI seven-layer model? Relax, I'm not going to go through it. Relax, it's okay. I mean, what was the point of it? The only valuable point is, and those of you with the gray hair or the shiny spots on top, tell me if I'm wrong. The main value of the OSI model was so that the sales guy could say, this is a layer three device.
Oh, okay.
Right? Can you name a pure layer three device with no presentation layer aspects, no layer two aspects? I can't. I mean, IP. Nobody buys IP. Right? It's the same thing. I'm going to tell you about three kinds of clouds. Infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and then software as a service. But you know, they're not integers. They're not integers. They're real numbers. So it's going to be in between. So it's just a ranging exercise, okay? The other benefit of the cloud is when I went to university, people in university in general, as you may recall, there's a lot of alcohol sometimes and late eating and stuff. And so we go to Chinese places, and I know I don't think they do this here, but in the States, if you get Chinese food, you get these cookies, and you open the cookies up, and there's a little piece of paper in it with a fortune on it. Do they do that here? Okay, I'm sorry. That was invented in the United States. I'm sorry it came over here. It's not my fault. Okay. So it doesn't happen in China, right? So anyway, so you get a fortune like, you know, you will always have good health. And the dumbass joke, and it was only funny after three beers, was you'd add the words in bed. So you are very energetic in bed. You know, like you haven't been drinking, neither have I. That doesn't seem funny. But try it today after two beers, three beers, okay? So now for IT salespeople, anything they were going to say is, we have a fantastic routing solution in the cloud. Just add in the cloud to anything, it's worth an extra 20%. Okay? Just remember that. All right, so follow this with me if you would. Don't look at me, look at the words. Services that you used to get from local servers that you owned, talking on wires in your walls to computers in your building, are now sitting on servers that somebody else owns, and you don't talk to it with wires, you talk to it over the internet, typically with HTTP. Is that helpful? Is there anyone who thinks that's a bad definition? By the way, I think that's a great definition. I invented it, but I mean still, I think this is a great I've been using it for 3 years, no one has ever argued the point. But I know that we have some Northern Europeans here, and you're all very smart guys and mathematical, guys and women. In America, when we say guys, that's a 2012 way of saying ladies and gentlemen, okay? So, and I know for, like, but anyway, never mind. I'm just trying not to offend anyone more than I'm. Here we go. Cloud equals your stuff's on somebody else's servers, plus you access it via a browser. That make sense? Okay, good. I think the earliest example is web hosting. So you have some stuff. You know, by the way, you guys taking pictures? This, go ahead. But this PowerPoint is on the ComNet. And if it's not, drop me an email and I'll put it. Oh. Stop tweeting that stuff. Because, you know, when I stop and take the picture like this, I look at when I'm doing the. Don't make me set this thing to kill. That means the earliest example is web hosting. I mean, I've had a website up since 1994, I think, and it's been on my own servers. But there's not a reason in the world I couldn't host it on somebody else's servers. I'm just paranoid about how much it's going to cost me. The single most popular and probably the sweet spot for cloud services right now, the easiest one to explain, is hosted Exchange mailboxes. Whose servers? The other guy's servers. How do you get to them? Across the web. Are you setting up the operating system? No. Are you patching the operating system? Is he patching the operating system? Should I hope so? So that's probably the simplest example I can think of right now. Now I've been doing computers since November 12th, 1973. I still remember my first touching of a and 75 people in a room. I'd been reading about this stuff. Guy's got this teletype, this 20 milliamp current loop teletype out to a PDP something. If you don't know what I'm talking about, don't worry about it. So he explains programming, explains BASIC, and he gives us a problem to solve. He says, anyone want to do this? I still want to touch a computer. In front of 75 people, I successfully wrote a non-trivial program that worked the first time in BASIC. Oh, hang on. No, don't clap. Because the problem is it gave me an unreasonable expectation of how good my programming abilities would be afterwards. When VB.NET became like C-sharp in fancy clothes, I was like, okay, this is how I give up. Anyway, so about every 5 or 6 years, we'll do this thing in the business. We'll say, you know what? You know what we're doing wrong? We're putting all of our important data on our computers. And our guys are taking care of them. You know those guys in the basement? Those IT guys, they kind of smell funny and they don't, you know, don't really understand the business. That's what they say about us, you know. So we have an idea. Let's take that important data and have somebody we don't know manage it. No, because that'll be good. They'll pay better attention, you know. So we do this for a while, and the first guy that does it gets to be interviewed on, I don't know, is Datamation still around? I don't think so. What computer magazines still exist in paper? Okay, on the cover of the InfoWorld site or something like that. And then 5 years go by and people start saying, well, this cloud stuff, this outsourcing stuff, this time sharing stuff, whatever it is. And then somebody says, we know the answer. We're going to get some buildings with air conditioning and we'll put in our own servers. That's innovative. You know, so this is the latest outsourcing. Now, by the way, it can be a good thing. Here's our three kinds of clouds. First is infrastructure as a service. It is sometimes known as hardware as a service. So IaaS or HaaS. You will find that all of these are AAS's. So it's IaaS, platform as a service is PaaS, and software as a service is SaaS. And you're waiting for me to make a joke about making AAS's out of all of us, but I wouldn't stoop to that kind of pun. So if you were thinking that, it's not my fault. Anyway, so what happens is, so right now what happens if, I'm going to tell you a university story because I do a lot of work with universities. And so the guy at the chemistry department, it's always a guy. I've never known an IT person in the chemistry department that was a woman. Now, there must be one out there. I just have never met one. So, and if there is one in the room, I'm sorry. That person met me. So the person who's the departmental admin, the local admin, chemistry department, needs a new server. And you're the central IT person. And so they fill out 15 forms, jump through whatever hoops, et cetera. And the server arrives from Dell, and somebody has to open it up, take it out of the box, plug it in, make sure it works. Does anyone like that job? Is it like a really fun job? So the idea is, instead of buying servers from Dell or HP or IBM or whomever, what you do is you go to Amazon EC2, or you go to Azure, or you go to Rackspace, and you say, I need a server that's got, you know, 8 CPUs and this much RAM and this much storage. And what do? They spin up a huge virtual machine. And you access that virtual machine through some web interface. Maybe you can RDP. But that's the plan. I like the phrase hardware as a service because that really seems like the better answer. Essentially, you're not taking servers out of boxes anymore. You're just firing up HTTPS to somewhere. That makes sense? That's infrastructure as a service. How does it change your life? If you're an IT pro, how does it change your life? If your job is to open up the boxes, stick them in the racks, turn them on, and make sure they work, you're screwed. If that's all you do, you're screwed. No, and please, I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying, you know, that's the reality of the matter. So, Microsoft version is called Persistent VMs. They just came out, about a month ago or something along those lines. It's usually your job to either put the operating system on there or update the operating system. You have to put software on top of it. So basically, you're not winning much. That's IaaS. Does that make sense? All right, seeing no objections, I'll move along. Private cloud. You hear the phrase private cloud, right? What is this all about? Private cloud is essentially, instead of you going to Amazon, so again, here's my story. It's a university. You're the central IT person. You have the English department, the chemistry department, the physics department, the ancient Greek literature department saying, we need a server. Instead of you doing that, you know, instead of that, you give them Amazon's number and they get it from Amazon. That's infrastructure as a service. But you might not want to do that. What you might want to say is, We central IT guys are going to go buy a whole bunch of servers, stick them on a rack, put some software on them, and now we're Amazon EC2. Now we're Azure Persistent VMs. And then the notion is we add some security to it. So now if I'm the chemistry departmental administrator, I get a certain number of credits. And so when I want a virtual machine, I get on a web page, I punch in my username and password. That gives me a certain amount of juice that I can have. And it then allows me to be able to spin up a machine within my requirements. Is that making sense so far? So inside your organization, you're essentially doing what Amazon does or what Microsoft does with their Azure Persistent Virtual Machines. You can do chargeback to a certain extent. This kind of varies, but you can do chargeback. And you have budgets. That all making sense? What's the key? Here's the way that I see private cloud. Private cloud equals virtualization, but not just that. Virtualization plus a web front end for self-service plus automation. So in the simplest form, look, the easiest way to do this is with System Center. But if you're cheap like me, you could do it with Hyper-V for 2012. Some PowerShell scripts and a web front end that you could build in about a day. So that's a possibility. That make sense? Questions? Anybody? All right. Platform as a service. This is the weirdest one. It's the weirdest one because it's something that nobody asked for. It's like, I mean, people would say, okay, I don't want to have to build these servers. Amazon, do it for me. Or I don't want to deal with these Exchange mailboxes. Intermedia, do it for me. Platform as a service is a cool idea. The cool idea is, we built our applications on top of operating systems. What if we built it on top of a special operating system? An operating system that's built to be in the cloud. An operating system that is built to be able to expand and grow and stuff like that. And Microsoft's Azure is like that. When you have an Azure cloud surface, that's a platform as a service. But the important thing is you typically have to write an application that is a brand new application that never existed before. Okay? So you've got something that's, and why would you care? We'll get to that in a minute. Software as a service, this is the easiest one to talk about. This is if you need Exchange mailboxes, if you need, hang on, gotta get my clock here to make sure that I'm not too far behind. Good. All right then. And we're out of here at 5:45. Okay. So if you need SharePoint accounts, etc., instead of you setting up the servers, somebody sets up the servers, somebody sets up the operating system, somebody sets up the application, and then sells you essentially per user stuff. I gave you the example of Intermedia's. I think they're probably one of the biggest Exchange hosting places. But Microsoft's answer, which if it's not the biggest in the world, will be in the next year, is Office 365. I like Office 365. I like the name, you know, because it came out last year, 2011, Office 365. And I was doing a keynote at a conference about the future of Windows and stuff. And I said, Office 365, this is back in 2011. Office 365, I said, huh, I wonder if it's going to be able to keep running next year, 2012, because there's 366 days. Will it run on February 29th? I don't know if you know this answer, but on February 29th, there was some kind of, like, you know, date problem with Azure, and it went down. So I was just kidding. This Microsoft guy emails me, he's like, this is your fault. Has anybody here looked at Windows 8? Anybody played with Windows 8 at all? Okay, so back when XP came out, nobody remembers this, but when you clicked the XP start button, all of a sudden it got, like, the start thing covered, like, a quarter of the screen, and previously it had been small. I made a dumb joke 10 years ago at a keynote. Hell, I said, in 10 years, you're going to need a whole new screen for the start screen. It's like, I'm not making predictions anymore. So just, all right. So software as a service. Everybody good with that? Any questions on this? All right, good. All right. So big question, is this going to cost me my job? Because that's a reasonable question. Let me talk to you a little bit about this, and let me be in the bright light. I want you to see my face. I am not going to scold you. I don't want this to sound like a scoldy thing. Some people might hear it as a scolding thing. It's not. Let me clarify. Many of you have bought my books. Many of you have gone to my classes. Many of you have attended my sessions. Those of you who have done these things, thank you, thank you, thank you. If you hadn't done this, I would have had to get a job, and I don't think I could handle that. All right? So, but I've been in the business for a while, and so have you. And when we hear about the cloud, a lot of us worry, and, you know, it's a valid worry, is it going to affect our jobs? But let me just flip that around. And again, please see this in the positive light in which I mean to say it. Hasn't the ground been shifting under our feet for as long as you can remember? I mean, I'll give you an example. How many of you had to worry about changing passwords 10 or 15 years ago? Well, now you've probably got a web portal that does it. And so whoever was doing that, you know, I mean, doesn't get to do that anymore. There's a lot of things I love. I mean, you know, I back in 1985, I invented the first class, at least in the U.S., about how to fix PCs. I mean, this is in the days where if you wanted a serial port, it was a $250 board, and if you looked at it funny, static electricity would kill it. And it's like, oh, no problem. If it breaks, you just change the UART to 16550, and if you know what I'm talking about, you're way too old, you know. So, but see, I loved doing that. I really loved, I mean, I'd love to keep teaching, but there's no money in those classes anymore because everything's on a board. I mean, stuff just changes, you know. There's an interesting observation that people make about when you're looking at resumes. And people say, someone says they've had 20 years experience in something. But you stop and you talk to them and you realize that they've actually experienced the same year 20 times. You probably know people like that. None of us are like that. Nobody in the IT business gets to experience the same year 20 times in a row, right? 20 years ago, you were working with what? Completely different stuff. Maybe Windows, maybe not. 20 years ago, you were worried about OS 2 versus Windows 3, right? That was a big change, you know? 20, 25 years ago, was, gosh, do we go with Ethernet or Broken Ring, you know? So, you know. We've always had stuff to worry about. And many of you, I got a chance to say hello to some of you. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to say hi to everybody, but I mean, I said, what are you here for? And a lot of you said to me stuff like, how do I make the choice? The answer is I have no idea. I mean, you know, because what's going to end up happening is that the prices are going to change. Remember I told you cloud years? Think of cloud years as everything changes very quickly. So what you're going to see is that it all boils down to what it's going to cost you. And that's going to change on a regular basis. And that's going to boil down to, first of all, what the vendor's willing to offer, because I would argue that most vendors have plenty of space to lower their prices, and how much you're going to buy. It's kind of like I was saying to the folks in the back. So think about this. Has anybody here ever had to buy CALs, client access licenses? Is that anybody's job here? Okay, yeah. So you talk to the Microsoft guys, and I forget what they cost. What are they, $40 list or something like that? $40, that's like 2 euros, okay? So isn't that right, something like that? Did I translate that wrong? I'm sorry, 7 meters, right? I'm not good at this metric stuff. Anyway, but what's the magic word that you say to make the CALs get cheaper? Linux. Well, we're thinking about going to Linux, and the price goes down, you know? So that's the same story here. So, I mean, please understand, there's always been disruptive technologies. There's always been things that change our jobs. That's the bad part. I mean, yes, that makes the earth disappear out from under us. But what brings the earth back? How many of you are dealing with new things all the time? That's us. That's all of us. And besides, do you think that your whole company's going to go to the cloud on Tuesday? There's no such thing as going to the cloud. There's no such thing as going to the cloud. If you decide to move to Exchange-hosted mailboxes, your Exchange guys are screwed, yes. But your SharePoint people aren't. I'm saying, you do not have one IT system. Maybe you have some sort of ERP. Maybe you've got, I don't know, a personnel system. Maybe you've got other internal things. You've got various kinds of applications. You're not going to send them all to the cloud at the same time. That's A. B is, how many of you would trust a third-party vendor so much that you'd move your data out to the third-party vendor servers and not keep something running locally? How many of you would trust an outside vendor that much? Good. Okay. Do you work for Microsoft? Okay, just a second. So, no. And by the way, I'm not laughing at you. That is a valid point of view. You made a risk assessment. That's what we do with security. When someone says, I'll solve all your security problems, laugh and kick their asses out. Here's something I learned to say as an economist. The degree to which I can provide you reliability, the degree to which I can provide you reliability approaches 100% asymptotically. You learn to use that stuff, those words in economics, because you can charge more money for that. The degree to which I provide you reliability approaches 100% asymptotically as the amount of money that you give me approaches infinity. It always boils down to that. It doesn't matter who's doing it. Okay? So keep this in mind. There will be new things. How many of you have projects you don't have time for now? Come on, tell me the truth. And if you haven't got your hand up yet, how many of you have figured out how to integrate iPads into your domain? Yeah, I thought so. Okay. So that's my point. So our jobs change all the time. It could now, in some shops, it's going to be an excuse. I mean, if the people in the company call you guys Roy and Moss, there's not many, but I've been on sites where the IT staff is openly contemptuous of the user base. Have you seen those? Yes. Do you work in one of those? If you work in one of those places, you might be in trouble. Because the cloud becomes an excuse to get rid of an IT department that they don't like. It really boils down. This is history. I was around when we started bringing microcomputers into companies in the mid-70s, mid and late 70s, early 80s. You know why we did it? Because the mainframe guys weren't responding quickly enough. I had a job once with the U.S. government as a contractor job where, it's embarrassing, but we'd never actually done a trial balance of the entire U.S. budget, apparently. And so I got hired to write a program that sucked a lot of data off of a big mainframe, stuck it in a Lotus 1-2-3 spreadsheet, and if you have no idea what I'm talking about, it's like Excel, but older. So, and it would run a macro that would take like 23 hours to run. And I said, guys, this is big stuff. Why would you stick this in a little computer? Why don't you have your mainframes do it? And the answer was, the mainframe guys told us it would take 3 years to write that program. You're laughing. How many of you worked in an MIS shop in the 80s? COBOL shop. The average backlog was 2.5 years. The mainframe guys weren't doing what we wanted, so we brought PCs in. It's going to be the same thing for the clouds if we're not, you know, not providing the service. So most of it will end up doing on-premise and off-premise. Here's the other thing. If you're concerned about whether or not you're going to lose your job, understand, and many of you already said it to me when I went around to say hello. What's going to be the single most important factor in determining whether to go to the cloud or not? Come on, this is easy. Money. It's going to be money. The ultimate reason why the boss, and I'm not saying your boss, I don't know your boss. Maybe your boss likes you. Maybe your boss would never cloud you. I don't know. But if you don't want to get plowed by the cloud, then the question to ask yourself at any time, because the boss is going to ask this question, can we do it more cheaply in the cloud than with all of you? But you got to prove that. If a cloud vendor can come in, so here's step one. Step one is somebody in your organization who wears a tie will sees an article, hears about the cloud, watches a television commercial. Like one day someone comes in and says, I don't know if they run this commercial here. Does Microsoft run TV ads that say, to the cloud? You seen that one? Most of you have no idea what I'm talking about. Okay, so what happens is somebody wants to do something very compute intensive, and they'll say, to the cloud, and the table their computer is sitting on goes, like the Batcave, you know, like the entrance in the Batcave, and now things are better because we're in the cloud, you know. But anyway, it's marketing. Marketing does what it does, you know, creates growth, and without growth, the economy collapses, and, you know, fire and brimstone, you know, and dogs and cats living together, stuff like that. Ultimately, the question is going to boil down to, in naked terms, can we do it on the cloud cheaper than with you? Can we do it in the cloud cheaper than we can with you? How do we get those numbers done? This is important. This is really important. The way we answer that question is, we're going to answer questions like the following. It's not how much do you guys cost. It's how much does the way we do it now cost? Let me give you an example. I come in as a cloud guy. I got a tie on, you know, so I'm a sales guy, right? And because I'm not, but, you know, that's how you know. And I say, well, how much does it cost to print a 5-page report off a print server in your organization? Let me say that again, since we don't have real walls and you can hear the other guy as well, okay? So how much does it cost to print a 5-page report on the color laser printer on the servers? Could you give me that number off the top of your head? I'll bet some of you can. How many could give me that number? You got that number. Okay, a few of you. All right. How would the rest of you do it? Let's think about it. Let's do some economics. So, how would we get started? Well, we know how much the paper costs. That's easy, right? We could do some toner, some electricity, amortize the cost of the printer, throw in some of the server. Are you with me on this? These are the direct costs, guys. These are the variable costs. They're the easy ones. So let's say we come up with a price like, I'm making this up, $5. That's a half a euro. And so I just want to keep this like relevant so you guys understand what's going on. So, because it could get expensive otherwise. So, but there's more costs, aren't there? Because what's some of the other costs? Well, we got to include some of the rent on the building, just a little bit. We have to include some of the boss's salary and the boss's boss's salary and so on. Is everybody with me on this? The word for that is overhead. You probably knew that. The direct costs are pretty easy. The overhead costs, well, that's where things get a little squishy. As an economist, I worked with accounting people. Now, we're different people. Economists look at the forest. Accounting people look at the trees. We're natural enemies. Okay? So, but seriously, the way you do it is you make a number up. I'm serious. There's an inexact part called overhead. If you're not currently tracking costs, please start tracking costs. Once you start tracking costs, then you can start saying, here's our estimate of what it costs to do a 5-page report, something like that. So how are we going to do it? There's a direct cost. Then you have to make some assumptions. You have to make some assumptions. And by the way, you know where you get these numbers? You pull them out of the air. But you footnote what you were thinking when you pulled them out of the air. That's what everyone does. I'm simplifying a little bit, obviously. But basically, people just say, this seems like a good guess. And you just go with it. As long as it's in the footnote, put it in the Excel spreadsheet, small font, so it's there. And you're laughing, because you know what? If you don't do it, somebody else is going to do it. Because believe me, when the cloud people come in, they've already talked to 500 organizations. They've got some bullshit. They've got some numbers that I'm really sorry. I never say that out loud. I'm sorry. There's numbers that have been accepted in other presentations as not being bullshit. Then, seriously, I mean, there's a thing that I like to refer to it as numerological proctology. Okay? And they've got PhD numerological proctology guys, you know, working for some cloud vendors. So, but I'm saying, my point is, but look, I'm picking on the cloud vendors a little bit, but what's the reality? The reality is this. Somebody's got to come up with these numbers. I mean, somebody's got to come up with these numbers. And so there are standards, or you can build your own standards. So what should you be doing? You should be looking at System Center Operations Manager if you're not doing that. You should be looking at your event logs. You should be looking at performance monitor. Start grabbing all this stuff because, again, if you don't do it, somebody else is going to do it for you. Okay? All right. Let's do look at the case for and against. All right? So should you go to the cloud? Well, let's see. Anybody here got a Hotmail account, Live account? Okay, good. How many got a Gmail account? Okay, right. Oh, hang on. Do that again. How many Live accounts were there? Put them down in the Gmail accounts? If there's any blue shirts here, you might want to look at that. So, yeah, anybody here on iTunes? No? Okay. How about Facebook? I'm so sorry. I thought you guys were smarter than us. I didn't realize that you're... Anyway, so... Relax, you're running the cloud. So, what about your organization? Well, let's look at that, okay? So, here's the imaginary story. Imagine if servers were completely invisibly reliable, if you didn't think about servers. What if networks never failed? What if we stopped thinking about cables? What if we stopped thinking about protocols? What if we stopped thinking about exchange and started thinking about how good the mail is? Or better yet, so good we don't think about it. That's the plan, right? Imagine if communicating with your friends and business partners was so easy you forgot there were computers involved. That's the goal, right? And we've been trying to do that. I know that sounds fluffy, but I just wanted you to understand, this is the goal. Now, let's be very clear. We're not anywhere near there, right? Clouds are a new way to Clouds are a new way to attempt to do that. So we've been doing some economics, but I thought I'd say economics truth just once. Competition is the key. We know this from the past. What economics tells us is that a set of organizations seek to provide lower cost, higher reliability, and greater flexibility, both in size and application functionalities. That's the first ingredient. And by the way, we want that, right? How many of you are excited when Facebook's down? You know, how many of you are excited when your email's down? Nobody is. If those organizations are staffed by smart people, and by the way, that's what happens. Do you know what, like, one of the number one criteria for getting a job at Microsoft is? Big IQ. You know why they bought Rusinovich? He's got a four-digit IQ, you know? Seriously, Mark will explain stuff to me. He's like, you're smart. I'm like, I've only got 3 digits of my IQ, Mark, you know, so. In general, IT... I guess we're all IT people, like I said. In general, IT people are smarter than the rest of the people, you know? I'm saying, because this is where we are, because this is a place where they want smart people, you know? I mean, I told you, I got degrees in economics. I'm so grateful for the IT business. The IT business is a great place for people who graduated with social science degrees and would otherwise be useless drains on society to become productive members of society. I'm very, very, very grateful. So if there's lots of potential customers and a chance to make it big, it's going to happen. Economics makes these things happen. Some examples. Back in the 40s, 50s, Japan, late 50s, Japan says, we're going to go take over the American automobile market. And they said, we know the guys to do this, Nissan. That didn't work out so well. Meanwhile, in the late 30s, a guy named Shichiro Honda started making pistons for Toyota. Never got any support from the Japanese government. Came over to the U.S., built great, reliable cars. And at one point, they were the, I think it's still true, they make more American cars than American car companies do. Here's a case where, you know, smart people focused on a problem. Here's another case, unfortunately. Another case is agricultural organizations are faced new government regulation in the early 70s that saturated fats were a bad idea. There's no scientific basis for this. And so what happened was the U.S. government went out and did a lot of studies. The guy who was behind the study believed that saturated fats were bad because he read it in a diet book. And so he ignored all the studies that said saturated fats were fine. We had lots of data. Went after the studies that said monounsaturated and polyunsaturated are better. And said, oh, saturated fats are bad. Industry went out, and they said, we know how to make, because they needed saturated fats to cook. And they said, we know how to take unsaturated fats and make them look saturated. And they created something called trans fats that have killed millions of people. You increase the amount of trans fats in your diet by 2.78%, and according to two huge studies, you double your risk of coronary heart failure. So sometimes economics makes good things. Sometimes not so good. So which way is the cloud going to go? We'll find out. So main cloud benefits today, two big ones, possibly cheaper, may save you some money. Along these lines also, this is 1.5, is that it takes the nature of your costs and shifts them from being lumpy payments. That is capital expenses, buying a lot of hardware, to more consistent per month expenses, that is operational expenses. So you hear that phrase, clouds let us go from having to buy a lot of computers, pay for a lot of people, lumps of money, to a fairly predictable monthly cost, operational expense, CapEx versus OpEx. And scaling up and down is important. If you have a server-based system, scaling up and down may be important. If that's not clear, let me explain how this could happen, okay? So if I worked for this magazine, you guys know Sports Illustrated? I don't know whether people outside the U.S. know. Okay, sorry. It's a big sports magazine that comes out every month. Anyway, so you probably don't know the other part of the story. So if I ran their website, it would look like that, okay? And that's just a screenshot. I don't know anything about sports. This man looks like he's tired or something. He's had some interesting drugs. Anyway, one issue a year, though, has nothing to do with sports. It's the swimsuit issue. Okay? This is a monthly magazine, and this magazine stays on the stands for 44 days. It's the longest month of the year. And I found the least objectionable one I could find, by the way. But the point is, if you're the guy running the Sports Illustrated website, here's your traffic. Then there's swimsuit issue. So what are you going to do? You want to go out and buy a bunch of servers that you keep up 44 days a year? No. If you just click a few things, make your system bigger, things are good. Also, cloud vendors tend to site their data centers away from volcanoes and stuff. There are some in Iceland, but it depends on which side of the island you're on, the way the wind blows and that sort of thing. Anyway. As I said, it may free you up to do new things. I mean, maybe you'll finally have the time to figure out how to make those iPads, you know, integrate, or for that matter, the slates that what are they called? The surface slates? Things might help me anyway. And it simplifies measuring the cost of IT. A lot of people like that. Some small organizations have moved everything out to the cloud, Office 365 and stuff like that. And what they like is they see one check they're writing every month, and they know exactly what their cost of IT is. Azure people have told me that they've gone to Azure, and a side effect of going to Azure that was interesting to them was that they found out exactly how much it cost to develop an application. It's interesting, right? Just as we IT pros are hard to track what we cost, it's hard to track what developers cost as well. And so there's actually some folks who have said to me, you know, we like the fact that we developed this thing on Azure. We know exactly how much it cost because we got the bill every month. So that was kind of interesting. Minus, it may not save money. There's going to be situations where it's not going to save you money. And not all applications are well suited to the cloud. I mean, you're going to find some old applications that will only run on XYZ hardware, and the cloud ain't got XYZ hardware, you know. And again, most shops will not become cloud only. Don't be surprised if it takes you 20 years. I mean, even if you're going to go to the cloud, it might take you 20 years to get there. How many of you had mainframes and shut them down at some point? How many of you had mainframes and still have mainframes? You know, we don't throw stuff away in IT. We just kind of stuff it off in the corner. We make it legacy hardware, you know, it's like legacy systems. I love this business because we have such great phrases. You know, we used to say, until about 20 years ago, we used to say crappy old applications that we hate but still have to support. And then one night, overnight, it's like I came into the office and everyone was saying legacy applications. Sounded so good, legacy. It's like somebody died and left you $1 million in debt. So. And then there's a service issue we'll talk about in a minute. I mean, I had an issue with a cloud vendor named Goggle or something like that, using a service called Postini. It's an anti-spam service. I bought it before Google. Is that Google? Is that what it? Yeah, Google. Bought it. And something happened. They create an account for me. I didn't know this because I was already paying Postini. There was a problem with my credit card. And it's one of these things where I needed to go here to reset it, but I couldn't reset it without going here, but I couldn't go here without going there. So I was in this loop, and I thought, this is why there are humans. And so I called up, and this woman got on the phone. If she was a woman, I think it might have been a synthesized voice because there wasn't any, pretty much the same answer kept coming out of her mouth. It was, go to this location. I said, you keep telling me that, and I will read you the page because it's right in front of me, and it doesn't help me. This is one of those unusual situations. It was a crossover problem, and I'd like to give you money. Help me give you money. And so I wasn't getting anywhere. So I went back to my old, I got online, and I found the script from the Star Trek episode where James Kirk has to talk this robot probe into destroying itself because you were here to solve the problem, but you are the problem, and therefore I will destroy, you know. I thought I could make her explode. But so let's take a look at some of these things. So cloud reliability and service, that's going to be, isn't that a pretty picture? Ooh, ah. That's like $5 off my taxes for that. So, let's talk about quality and reliability of service. Is anybody worried about this? You know, I mean, first of all, let's talk about that 9 stuff. Everybody loves talking about 5 9s and 4 9s and 3 9s. So, how much debt? No, I'm told, because there's a song that says it, that there's 525,600 minutes in a year. If you have not 5 9 reliability, how many minutes can you be down? Ready? 8 minutes. 8 minutes. If you don't have a cluster, then either you don't have 5 9s or you don't patch, and I'm worried. Because I know not every patch requires a reboot. So. What's 4 9s? 4 9s is about an hour. 3 9s is about 8-10 hours? So here's a question, by the way. How many of you deliver 3 9s or better? Yeah, I mean, it's just most of us can't do that. Where I live, sometimes we get lots of water on the road, like half a meter of it sometimes. Oddly enough, the internet goes out then, which I kind of take personally, but, you know. No, it's a shame, because I've got, if you go to my website, it's in a server in my garage and attached to, like, the high-speed connection. You know, I got high-speed connection for my cable guys. And so I feel bad, because when the water gets that high, the entire world is cut off from Manassi.com. And there's going to be an element, definitely, of... I don't know about you, but for me, like, if I've got an IT staff, there's an element of having one throat to choke. That would be great, you know? Cloud computing is a service, and services have outages. And we're never happy about when mission-critical applications go down. What if email's down for a few hours? That's not a problem, right? Okay. So consider, what sort of response do you give now, and what do you expect? So I'm going to say to you, let's be reasonable about what we expect in terms of reliability of service, okay? Because there is, let's do some economics now. All economists know the following acronym, TINSTOFL. TINSTOFL stands for there is no such thing as a free lunch. Please don't write me an email and tell me that it's TINSTOFL. TINSTOFL is what Robert Heinlein, the science fiction author, all hail Admiral Robert, he made it, there ain't no such thing as a free lunch. But anyway, the idea is that we all want perfect uptime, but we're not going to get it. Because again, the degree to which I can give you perfect uptime is asymptotically related to how closely we get to infinity. Okay? What do we know about cloud vendors? From an economic point of view, because a cloud vendor is a capital-intensive industry, because it's a capital-intensive industry, that means it costs a lot of money to get started. And then once you got it running, it doesn't cost much to keep it going. Every cloud vendor's got a story about how this they have this hangar that's like 5 hectares in size, and they've got a zillion machines on racks, and skinny 18-year-olds in black T-shirts with silver rock and roll, you know, logos running the thing. So their variable costs are small, the original one. What does that mean? Capital-intensive industries tend to have increasing returns to scale. What that means in English is the bigger you are, the cheaper you are. What does that tell us? Certain industries are like that. For example, what's the biggest online auction website in the world? eBay. What's the second biggest? I didn't think so. Yeah. My guess is that there will be at most 5 significant cloud vendors in 10 years. 5 major players. And I may be being optimistic. Off the top of my head, I'm guessing Microsoft, Google, Amazon, Rackspace, and somebody else. What? Oh, and the Chinese cloud? Well, that will only work inside China, and you must, you know, be anyway, so that's right. Okay. Who knows? It's a matter of simple Darwinian business reality. So let's imagine we're running one of those companies. Let's say we're a big company. We've got maybe, let's say, 70 Fortune 500s as customers, 5,000 small-sized businesses, and 250,000 mom-and-pop operations, small organizations. When the cloud goes down, the phones will start ringing. Whose calls are we going to take? It's very simple. Very simple. People you're making your money with. So, when we talk about reliability, think about these things. What sort of uptime are you getting now? And by the way, when you look at that, look at it on an app-by-app basis. A lot of you said to me, how do I know when it's time to go to the cloud? And what did I say several slides back? If you don't know your current costs, you're dead. You're dead. Because the cloud people will come in. Scary, the cloud people. I mean, you know, the vendors who are providing cloud services will say, look, you know, they've got a story about how cheap they're going to be. And it may even be true. You know, if you don't have any numbers to compare it to, you're in a lot of trouble. Okay? So what kind of uptime are you providing right now? Let's turn around. Maybe you want to embrace the cloud. Maybe you think it's going to be a great idea. You've looked at it, and it's the right thing for you. You have to be able to say, what are you currently providing? You can't, if you're going to say to a cloud vendor, I want 4 9s, and you're only producing 2.5 9s, Be prepared to pay for it. I don't know. Is anybody providing 5-9 service now? I mean, are you at least going to claim that you are? Maybe you should start a cloud vendor. So what does it cost to? And find that, and that answer will vary application by application. And some of it, I think, is a matter of personal relationship, you know? Because for me, I think, my experience has been, so I run my own IT, and I own the company, and I know that when something's happened that I did or maybe that I didn't protect against and I'm down for 8 hours, I'm mad at me, but I'm not as mad as I would be if Google were down for 8 hours and I were paying Google. So think about that when you're laying this stuff out. How about SLAs? This is the point where everybody says, I'll get a good SLA, service level agreement. Has anybody here got a provider of any kind with an SLA that you like? No, but I'm saying, it's simple math. SLAs are all about what? Risk. Do you think there's a cloud vendor out there that's deliberately saying, let's do the crappiest job we can get away with? No. They know that they're in a death struggle right now. I mean, maybe when it's down to 5 vendors and nobody else. But all the cloud vendors are pretty much thinking pretty hard. The big crashes were not because they were stupid. The big crashes were perfectly honest mistakes that somebody made. We'll talk about those in a minute. Okay? So, now what I want is, look, here's the way SLAs work. Let's imagine that my cloud costs are $300 a month. I did that so I could divide it by days. So $10 a day I'm paying for cloud services. Let's just imagine that's the case. If my cloud vendor's down for 2 days, you know what most SLAs are going to give me? If it's like $10 a day, they're going to give me back $20. Now, the fact that I lost a bid, the fact that I lost a $1 million sale, they don't care about. You want the $1 million. They want to give you the $20. Well, it's only reasonable. Turn it around. That's what you would want to do. So let me ask that question, because that's what I want. People often say to me, Mark, your website, I like the newsletters, but I mean, you know, your e-commerce system is a little primitive. I say, yes, we only have one programmer, and he's kind of busy. Why don't you let somebody else do it? My answer is, my privacy policy says if you buy something from me, nobody's going to find out. I go to vendors, and I say, will you guarantee this? They say, absolutely. I say, what if something doesn't work out? And they say, we'll say, we're sorry. But if you're a gold level, if you're a gold level customer, we're authorized to say we're very sorry. Seriously, though, if you're the cloud vendor, are you going to pay me $1 million because I told you I lost a sale? Of course not. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe you will. What would you do as a business? You'd go to an insurance company and you'd say, I want to buy an account. I want to buy a service that if anything happens, you'll pay this for me. You're laying off the risk to somebody else. So really don't expect much from SLAs. Because reasonably, from a business point of view, it's not reasonable to expect a tremendous amount. Okay? One question you might want to ask, though, is don't expect much from an SLA, although you might ask about privacy guarantees. This is interesting. I have sat in where some cloud vendors have talked, and people in the audience have asked, will you guarantee that you don't data mine our data in your cloud anonymously? Cloud vendors always change the subject. That scares me a little bit. How are cloud vendors doing? Amazon, remember they were offline for 3 days? Google can be down for as much as 4 hours. Microsoft was offline for, it was actually more than 3 hours because there were a couple of problems one after the other in May of 2011. Remember those outages? How did they respond? This is interesting. First of all, is that acceptable? Is anybody here using EC2? Anybody here using EC2? Was anybody affected by the EC2 outage? Did anybody move from Amazon after it? I've never found anyone. That scares me. So if it's okay for a big cloud vendor to be down for 3 days, that's not good. Here's what I found interesting. Amazon was dead silent for almost the end of the 3 days. Google has never admitted that they're ever down, that I can find. I may be wrong. Jim Thompson was the guy doing BPOS at the time, and he had a lengthy blog post where he said, you know, hey, this is what happened. Somebody found a malformed packet for SMTP servers, brought down our exchange servers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we did the best we could. I mean, this is how it could happen. It was all reasonable to me. And there was a DNS problem that he explained. I'm like, that was pretty cool. I thought that was impressive. Watch this closely for 2 reasons. First of all, Those are three vendors that I think are going to be big vendors 3 years from now. That's the first part. Second part is, I'm a little worried about the fact that none of the three, I'm not wishing ill on any of them, but I'm saying none of the three lost a ton of customers. This is creating the new normal, the new consensus of what's okay. What does that mean? You've got to manage your risk too. When you're looking at the cost of the cloud, how do you manage your risk? What will it cost us to keep a couple of servers running? What will it cost us to keep the data duplicated in our shop? Because for some of you, if your IT is down for 3 days, that might be unacceptable. Okay? So that's a consensus. That's something to be thinking about. Very briefly, applications. If the apps don't run, your organization is done. So will your apps run in the cloud? With infrastructure as a service, it's pretty easy. You're getting a virtual machine. You're ghosting. You're imaging your stuff up there. Maybe you have to change the IPs. Maybe you don't, right? Hyper-V 2012 means you don't have to change the IPs. So that's pretty easy. You may have some real hardware dependencies, like ancient stuff. Software as a service is even easier. You've decided to take your Exchange mailboxes and stick them in the cloud. All you need there is a migration tool. It is essentially the same process of going from Exchange 2003 to Exchange 2010. But check storage. I mean, there are limitations. There's some examples there in Azure. You know, blobs are a fifth of a terabyte, page blobs, terabyte. SQL databases limit to 150 gigabytes. I've never had a project that involved SQL databases bigger than 150 gigabytes, but I could see where it might happen. So keep that stuff in mind. What about with platform as a service? With platform as a service, if we're talking now about Azure, to my knowledge, there are no internal apps that run on your IIS servers on top of .NET or ASP.NET that can be moved directly over. It's going to take some rewrites. It's going to take some work. That's not a bad thing. I'm just saying, you're going to a new kind of world, a new foundation where you can grow just as quick as you want. All good stuff, but it's going to cost developer time. So think about that. So compatibility is not really a story. I said the number one thing is costs. Going to the cloud boils down to the same thing. Will it save you money or will it not? And there are three things. The structures of your cost changes. You're going to go from capital expenditures largely to operational expenditures. Instead of big lumps, to a nice smooth flow. New uncertainties arise. Again, think about quality of service. I mean, one thing that worries, first thing I heard about the cloud was I thought to myself, now wait a minute. If you think moving your stuff out to this cloud that's got 10,000 other clients is a good idea, well, what happens when your phones are down at home or your cable's down? See, because I work where I live, we used to have a phone company called GTE, which is a large, unhelpful phone company. And on the other side of town was Bell Atlantic, and that was a large, unhelpful phone company. And they merged to become Verizon, okay? A really large, unhelpful phone company. To me, the merger of GTE and Bell Atlantic brings new meaning to the phrase twisted pair. So, anyway, so when I call these guys, when my phones are down, you'd be like, oh, Mr. Manassi, you don't have any phones? Hang on. Hey, Clem, Manassi doesn't have phones. You're fired. Alicia, you're fired. Tom, get over there right now. Sir, we'll have somebody there in no time. It works like that for you, right? Again, it's all about the money. It's all about the money. They can't do that. They don't have the staff to do that. Right? And new costs appear. So let's talk about this. Your costs go to more fixed, less variable. I'm going to argue this. I'd be willing to bet that you could, in a couple of hours, give me a good prediction. We're talking about telling the future. Giving you a good prediction about what your IT costs will be next year. Am I right? You know what your hardware, you know, you've got to deal with Dell or Lenovo or somebody like that. You've probably got, you're either buying Microsoft stuff, maybe you got that SA, the software assurance thing. You know, it's you know what they say? Hey, that's a pretty nice operating system that you purchased there. Be a terrible shame if it were to become, let's say, upgraded when you was not thinking. So if you was to pay us a little bit of protection, I mean, if you was to get involved in licensing 6 point, you know, so. But I'm saying, the point is, why do large organizations like enterprise licensing? Because they know how much it's going to cost. It's checked there right every year. Power is going to be fairly predictable unless there's an energy shock. And people, you know what they cost because they're getting salaries. I mean, you know, these are all predictable. I'm guessing that you could tell the future. You could tell me what IT is going to cost in the next 12 months. Am I right? By the way, I told you I'd tell you how to tell the future. The future is going to be pretty much the same as the past, except more so unless it changes. That's the way we did that as consultants. So these are predictable. But, I mean, again, there's going to be people that are going to say in your organization, predictable but predictably too expensive in some people's minds and in some organizations. That's the point. So they're looking right now at the costs. A lot of the costs are lumpy costs and they're predictable costs. The contrast, though, is what the cloud. Now, how does the cloud do it? The way the cloud does it is it charges you per minute or per hour or something like that for the CPUs you're using, for the bandwidth you're using, for, and these per minute rates. So instead of like, you know, it's like the meter's running. Every single minute, the meter is running. And by the way, the thing that kills you, the people that I've seen who've gone to the cloud, you get what's called sticker shock. I don't know if that's a phrase that translates over here, but you know, when you look at the price sticker on a car, someone's like, holy crap, you know, that's sticker shock. Sometimes known as first month's bills cardiac arrest. Okay. Boy, I thought we got it all planned out. If the bandwidth numbers are the variable numbers. The bandwidth numbers are the variable numbers. But we're starting to see some interesting stuff. If you followed this week on some of the stuff that Hyper-V can do, it can actually put like maxes on these things where there's no more than a certain number of kilobytes that go out. Because a lot of the vendors won't charge you for incoming, they'll charge you for outgoing. But that depends. Those are things you gotta look at. So how much might this cost? Well, one kind of site to worry about, let's talk about a website. So I have a website. It's probably like a lot of your websites. It's an outward-facing website. It does more things for the external world. And I run my business the way a lot of people do. I've got a lot of free information there. I've got an online forum. There's lots of stuff that you get for free. And I figure, well, you know, hey, maybe you'll like me so much that you'll decide to buy something. What that means, though, is that if I put my site in the cloud, there's a lot of people just going click, 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 click. They're on the forum, or they're asking questions, or they're reading newsletters. They're not buying anything. If I put that in the cloud, it would bankrupt me. So for some sites, it doesn't make sense. Look at what, and here's another interesting question, too. If you're thinking about putting a public-facing website on the cloud, what keeps a vendor from writing a macro to just go click, 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 click to put you out of business? It worries me. There's cost estimation tools out there. Amazon's got one. This lets you look at the basically running a website on their location. This stuff is all pretty. I mean, could you get this information off of Perfmon and off the IIS logs? You could. Off your web logs, you get this stuff. But if you want to run a virtual machine, Elastic IPs, Elastic IP non-attached time. What is that? You know, I don't know what an Elastic IP is, but it sounds like it uses petroleum. And as we know, that's not sustainable. So. Actually, they've got some. The Amazon guys have several examples that can be quite useful. So, basically, before the cloud, all your costs are fixed and predictable. Do you agree? After the cloud, it's per minute costs. So it's very variable. So honestly, the cloud vendors know this. They're trying to get you to come on board. And what it means is, you have to go from a predictable world, and by the way, maybe a predictable world that's too expensive, to a variable world. I mean, what if you face this, like, it costs us $10 million to do IT now, but when we go to the cloud, it'll be somewhere between $4 million and $7 million. You save money either way, but the accountants are dying. You know? Just, you know, putting the accountants in an early grave. So this is how your boss will end up, or whoever the manager is, will end up seeing this. Here's a new cost, though. No one seems to talk about this one. I predicted this 3 years ago, and I've had about 100 people after these talks come to me and say, that really turned out to be a big thing. So the thing is, when you move the servers to the cloud, oddly enough, the people stay. The people don't go to the cloud. That means that all that data, I mean, right now, if you've got people sitting on their laptops in the office communicating with the servers in the basement over wires that you put in years ago, it's not costing you anything to move the data around. If you move the servers out to the cloud, you're going to need a lot more bandwidth. Does that make sense? Well, no, wait, some of you should be saying no. Because if you work at a large organization, a 24 time zone organization, if you're Exxon Mobil, I'm making this up, if you're Exxon Mobil, they've probably got a number of server services that they're running internally, and so most of their clients are going across the web to get from point A to point B. Make sense? All right. So I told you guys I'm going to run a little bit late. If you got to go, I understand, but I'm hoping you can stay a little longer. So let's talk about another thing, too. So that was bad news. That was bad news. Want to hear good news? Good news is, look at the components of cloud vendor costs. People rent electricity, hardware, bandwidth, software. I think that's what the components are. How do you think these things are going to change in the next 10 years? How about people? I don't know how things are here in the United States. Real wages have not gone up, unfortunately. So, who knows? Rent, does that go up a lot? I don't know. Depends on where you are. The idea is that, you know, they're sticking these data centers out in the middle of nowhere where there isn't much rent cost. Electricity, that could go up or down. How about hardware? Does hardware get more expensive or less expensive? Does hardware get more expensive or less expensive? It gets less expensive. Does software get more expensive or less expensive? Oh, don't say more. Is Windows Server more expensive or less expensive than it was 20 years ago? 19 years ago? All right, let's do the math. So 18 years ago, you could buy NT Server 3.5, standard edition, for $1,000 a copy. Standard Server 2012, unless they change the numbers, I'm not making any announcements, I don't work for Microsoft, but I mean, I'm guessing you'll be able to buy a copy of Standard Server 2012 for $1,000. $1,000 back in 1995 bought a whole lot more donuts than $1,000 does in this year, right? So I would say that we're getting better deals. I mean, look, think about all the cool stuff in 2012 that wasn't in 3.5. 3.5 had the DHCP server. That was exciting. So. And how about bandwidth? You think bandwidth's going to get more expensive or less expensive? Less expensive. That means these are the big components. Talk to your cloud vendor and say, how much cheaper are you going to be in 10 years? Ask that question. How much cheaper are you going to be in 10 years? And if they don't have an answer, you know, maybe you shouldn't go with them. So the best part of cloud selection is dealing with the marketing and sales guys. And I just had to bring along this ad. I came across this for a hosting vendor when I was looking on TechNet. Now, I thought we'd gotten past using women to sell things to IT pros. Granted, many of us haven't seen a woman in 3 years, but still, you know. Anyway. Just always add in the cloud. Let's talk briefly about agility. What does agility mean? Vendors talk about agility. And the good part about agility is this. Again, we're back to Sports Illustrated. The Sports Illustrated folks have a rack of 10 servers that do the job for them 11 months out of the year. 1 month out of the year, they don't need just 11 servers. They need like 40 servers. They don't want to have to go buy 40 servers and put them in. If you've got a cloud-based application, you just get on the web interface and you say, bring some more servers on. And literally, in a few minutes, you can increase or decrease your capacity. That's that scalability thing we talk about. I don't think that's a word, scalability, but we use it anyway. Now, understand that with most vendors, that's not automatic. Here's a question, and we're starting to see this more and more. I'm seeing cloud vendors saying, oh, no, we've got this thing where if more and more people hit your web servers, we will automatically bring on more web servers. We'll scale automatically. Is that good? You know, what it means, again, if I'm a bad guy, I want to put you out of business, I've got a bunch of machines hammering your servers. So there's some very interesting stuff. For example, in the Microsoft world, VMM 2012 does some really, really cool stuff. It's already out. It does some really cool stuff in your private cloud and that sort of thing. The cloud that you're building. And there's more and more stuff that lets you automatically scale up and down. So I'm not saying it's a bad thing, because for a private cloud, that shouldn't be a problem, right? But take a look at those technologies. Hyper-V 2012 does some really neat stuff that allows you to protect yourself from that blowing you up. What about the other kind of agility? What if you experience cloud remorse? That is, you've gone to the cloud and you say to yourself, wow, I heard that every cloud had a silver lining. Turns out it's just water. Really, because I read that a large cumulus cloud has on the order of, let me do the math here, 2.5 billion liters of water in it. So if you're going to the cloud thinking all's going to be, you know, all silver, you might just get wet. So anyway, what if you experience cloud remorse? What if you want to get out? How hard is that going to be? You're going to incur costs going into the cloud. You know, it takes money to move things over, to do your change your IP addresses over, to rewrite the code, etc. Okay? Here's what I want you to do. I'm not saying don't go to the cloud. Go to the cloud. There's going to be cool stuff. You know, I mean, I'm going to move my exchange to the cloud as quick as I get time to do it, because I don't want to run my own mail server anymore. But before I do it, I'm going to say, what are the steps I have to do? How much software must I write? About how much time will it take me or a consultant to do it? And I'm also going to say, how hard will it be to leave the cloud? Will I be able to use my existing servers? Will I have to buy a new server, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? And what about if you're writing applications? In the Azure world, what do we say? You can't run Azure on a home server. You got to build an app that sits on the Azure cloud. And if you love that app, but you're not so happy about the cloud for some reason, then you've got to pay some programmers to change it back. Okay? Just do this. How many of you have a disaster recovery plan? That's part of what you do, your business continuity plan stuff. Really? I was hoping to see more hands. So how many of you have a disaster recovery plan? You actually came in one Saturday with the backup tapes and machines and tried it out. Okay, because if you have a disaster recovery plan and you've never actually tried it to see if it works, you don't have a disaster recovery plan. What you have is a particularly expensive form of high-tech prayer. Let's be clear. Prayer has a place in this, but not much. Okay, so cost this stuff out, okay? I'm going to ask you the security questions that you've already thought about. How many of you have done colos, co-location stuff? Co-location. Everybody uses this story, the Coke and Pepsi story. If Coke has a virtual machine in your cloud and Pepsi has a virtual machine in your cloud, they want to know they're on different servers. Do you want to share a VM host with someone in the particular SAN? Do you care? Has your cloud vendor said that they won't mine your data? And how secure are the data center locations? Ask the hard questions. You get to do that. You get to do that. I know the Microsoft guys will, I mean, if you look, you're going to be a big vendor. I'm told that they will show you, they'll take you on tours of their site. I saw a great presentation at the MVP Summit where this guy was talking about the Office 365 data center. He was very excited about what he was doing. Young kid, very smart. I mean, I felt better about Office 365 at the end of the talk. But one of the things he said that I loved was he said, we're doing this. This is our plan over the next 12 months. We have a plan of relentless upgrades. I thought, relentless upgrades. You don't like that? I just love that phrase. Anyway, so just about done. A couple more slides. So short version, just a review. Know your numbers, right? Please know your numbers. Maybe the cloud's the right answer. Maybe the cloud is the right answer. Maybe you should let the boss free you up from what you're doing, the boring stuff, to go find some other stuff. But which is going to be cheaper, right? Speak boss language. Ask for guarantees, but be realistic. Don't ask for 5 9s. If you can't even pull off 3, or if you're going to ask for 5 9s, understand it's going to be expensive. There's no such thing as going to the cloud. You have many services that are part of your network. You can take just one of them, send it off to the cloud. Some cloud experience is going to be great. I have heard very, very good things about people that go to big vendors for Exchange mailboxes. I'm a little worried about it myself because, you know, email's the way I live and breathe. But you know, talk to other folks. If you don't cloud, watch how they do it. I forgot to say this before. Remember my fantasy slide about how you don't even think about computers anymore? It just works. That's not going to happen this year. But you know what? When I hear the Google guys talking, when I hear the Microsoft guys talking, when I hear the Amazon guys talking about how they get things done and how they handle a rack going down, it's interesting. It's different. There's going to be a set of best practices, even if you don't cloud. Cloud vendors and people who build private clouds, they'll become a new consensus that's starting to form now about best practices about how to build a data center that can be kept up. Interesting ways of solving the problems. It's the way we always solve problems in the computer business is we throw more hardware at it. But that's okay because hardware keeps getting cheaper and people keep getting more expensive. So watch how people do it. Ask, what can I do with a little more time? Watch how they handle outages, please. First big outage that really gets some headlines. What do they do? Are they paying people off? Is it a reasonable payoff? What's going on? Do you get the impression they know what's going on? You know, when Azure went down on the 29th, Bill Lang posted this like 25-page blog about what exactly happened. It was complete disclosure. I'm impressed with what Microsoft's doing, you know, personally. Okay, I watch them more closely than Google, so I'm not picking on Google. I'm just saying the stuff I'm seeing out of Microsoft is surprising me. Check your apps. That's the big thing. That's the big thing. If you have 40 apps, line of business apps, I guarantee you 5 of them won't work on the cloud for one reason or another. So start looking at that stuff. Always watch the exits. Always watch the exits. How do I get out? How do I go to a different vendor? What's it going to cost to move another place? All right? So what's the answer? I have loved researching this stuff. I started this about 3 years ago. But in sum, I would say that I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from win and lose, but still, somehow it's cloud's illusions, I recall. But maybe it's just my fault. Maybe I really don't know clouds at all. You can find me at help@manasseh.com. I'm also tweeting at mmanasseh. We're doing evaluations. Please don't forget them. I got a talk tomorrow on DNS troubleshooting, first thing in the morning. And then last thing, we'll talk about some Windows power tools. I'm happy to stick around and talk. But otherwise, you have a good evening. Remember to use this knowledge for good and not for evil. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.